This is Dan Wright, founder of Behind the Scene Press in New York City, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 50. New gear from Nikon, Sigma, and Tamron. In this episode, Nikon releases a series of new cameras, Sigma gets into the mirrorless market and also makes APS-C shooters happy, Tamron wows with a new 85, a photographer creates a cool shot but destroys his subject, Instagram gets more secure, and another humanity fail on a beach in Argentina. All that and more in episode 50 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Dan. I greatly appreciate it. Dan Wright is a New York City-based teacher by day and photographer by night. Like most who enjoy this podcast, his day job is something other than photography, but his passion for capturing images drives him to capture concerts and more in the evenings and on weekends as he scratches that creative itch. He's also an accomplished portrait photographer and a great guy. If you want to see some of his work, you can check that out at behindthescenepress.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 50 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media or wherever else and helping to spread the word. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Some Sigma products get leaked out and thus aren't a surprise. But one thing we didn't see coming were new cameras from Sigma. Mirrorless cameras, no less. I didn't see this coming at all. And you didn't hear anybody talking about a possible mirrorless camera from Sigma because it didn't seem like something they'd be interested in. They seem to be really focused, no pun intended, on their lens lineup. A lens lineup which is stellar, by the way. I just didn't think they had any interest to compete in mirrorless. But apparently they do. Now, you may recall that Sigma makes the DP Quattro, which packs Sigma's Foveon sensor, and it's actually a pretty cool camera. But those have fixed lenses, and they just haven't caught on. I mean, you don't see them out there, do you? No, you don't. They're also very unwieldy and oddly designed, and I don't think anyone was super excited about them. But now, the company known most for its really sweet lenses has announced two new cameras, the SD Quattro and the SD Quattro H. Both with large Foveon Quattro sensors, a Sigma SA lens mount, and that of course makes Sigma's incredible line of global vision lenses available to use on these new mirrorless bodies, and that is huge. So if you think about it, this actually makes a lot of sense now. We just didn't see it coming. We've been so distracted with the current mirrorless makers out there and wondering what Canon and Nikon would do in this arena that we didn't even think about Sigma. And then out of the blue, bam! Sigma mirrorless cameras. I don't recall anyone uttering the word Sigma and mirrorless together. If they did, I'd like to know. I just didn't hear anybody talking about it. Certainly I didn't. So wow, an actual surprise for once, right? That is always fun. Now, if you're wondering what the difference is between these two bodies, the SD Quattro has a 29 megapixel APS-C crop size sensor, while the SD Quattro H uses a 45 megapixel APS-H size sensor. Yeah, you heard that right. 45 megapixels. That is a lot. And that is clearly the model that you want if you're shooting mostly landscapes and portraits. Now, if you're not familiar with the APS-H size, it sits between APS-C, which has a 1.5x multiplication factor, and full frame. APS-H is 1.3x, and that's the size of the old Canon 1D Mark III and Mark IV, the Leica M8, and a bunch of others that are within a hair of 1.3. Sigma says that the APS-C Foveon sensor provides image quality and resolution compared to a 39 megapixel sensor in traditional cameras, and that the APS-H model is the equivalent of a 51 megapixel sensor. They say this because the Foveon sensor is different than a traditional Bayer pattern sensor like most other cameras. So it's got a megapixel rating, but they're saying that's the equivalent of these higher megapixels if you were to have that in a traditional DSLR or mirrorless body. Both cameras are able to capture lossless, uncompressed raw images with a max ISO of 6400, and neither of these cameras, of course, are built for speed. You're not going to be shooting sports with them, as the SD Quattro does up to 3.6 frames per second, and the SD Quattro H can only do 3.8 frames per second. So if you enjoy shooting sports, these cameras will make you sad. And I don't want you to be sad. Both bodies have an unusual design, but not nearly as unusual as the DP Quattro cameras. Those things were a little bit kind of whacked out. These have magnesium alloy bodies, are rugged, dustproof, and splashproof. These new cameras have a two-mode, 9-point autofocus system that combines phase detection for speed with contrast detection for accuracy. As for focus setting modes, it includes movement prediction, face detection, free movement, focus peaking, and more. On the back is a 2.3 megapixel electronic viewfinder, that's an EVF, with a nearly 100% field of view, a 3-inch LCD screen around back that bucks the trend of the flippy screens and completely stays put. Kind of old-timey style there. So that gives you the pleasure of shooting high and low shots as you guess your framing, and then surprises you with your images later. Sarcastic much? Yes. Yes, I am. But let's move on. What is cool, though, is that there's a separate sub-monitor to the right of the LCD screen on back that shows you your most critical settings like ISO, aperture, shutter speed, whether or not you have exposure compensation dialed in, and much more. And that's going to be really handy. As with other cameras we've seen in the past year or so, these cameras have a super fine detail feature which captures 7 different exposures, then merges them into one shot with greater dynamic range and quality. Sigma is a massive tease, so they've yet to announce the pricing and availability for these cameras, but I can't wait to hear when they're available. I'd like to actually try one out. So what do I think about them? I think it's frankly embarrassing to Canon and Nikon that Sigma has beat them to the game with a more serious mirrorless body than the big two have. You know, people forget that Canon and Nikon do indeed have mirrorless systems, and they have for years now, but they're just horrible. Like I always say, do you know anybody that owns a Nikon V1 or J1 or a Canon EOS M system? No, you don't. Or if you do, that's really surprising. You must know a lot of people, because I don't know anybody that has any of those. And I know a lot of photographers. While these Sigma bodies aren't ideal for a first go at it, they're actually pretty darn good, I think. Now, we're not going to know the full details about how these perform in the wild until they're actually out there, but they look promising. We also don't know how well they focus, for instance. I used to have the original Sony A7S, and while that is a great camera, amazing in low light, it was horrible at focusing. So we'll see how these things shake out. Now, these bodies use Sigma's SA mount. In other words, they can use lenses like the awesome Sigma 120-300mm f2.8 Sport, which I own. Now, mine is Nikon mount, but hey, they also make that same lens in Canon and Sigma SA mounts as well. So if Sigma can do this, Canon and Nikon can release mirrorless bodies which use their current mounts, right? I mean, what's holding them back from that? And that is key there. I don't think the big two are nearly going to be as successful in the mirrorless arena until they have camera bodies that can take their current line of lenses that are mirrorless, because people clearly want mirrorless bodies, but they also want to hold on to their glass. Imagine you're a Nikon user and you have the choice between a DSLR version and a mirrorless version, and you don't have to get different glass. You can use your current glass that you've spent many years and many thousands of dollars amassing. That would just be amazing. It just makes sense. In addition to the surprise that was Sigma entering the mirrorless market, was an earlier announcement of a lens we actually knew was coming. And that is the Sigma 50-100mm Art lens with, get this, a constant 1.8 aperture. That is just amazing. But here's the rub. The Sigma 50-100mm f1.8 DC HSM Art is an APS-C lens. Yeah, I know. Wah, wah. But hey, it's great if you've got an APS-C crop size sensor body like the Nikon D7200 or that new Canon 80D. But many would love to have that on the full frame side, of course. So why did Sigma create this lens, which is essentially a 75-150mm equivalent in full frame terms? I believe it was in part to give APS-C shooters something that's going to be close to the classic 70-200mm f2.8 and help approximate the shallow depth of field that you would get with a lens like that. Remember, when you're shooting with a body that has a crop sensor in it, getting shallow depth of field is way more difficult. It can be done, but you've got some magic that you need to perform. A 70-200 2.8 on a full frame doesn't produce the same results on a crop body. If you've got a 70-200 2.8 on a full frame, it's completely different than on a crop body. So in my opinion, that's where this new lens comes in. Shooting at f1.8 should greatly help in approximating what you would get if you were shooting on a full frame body with a 70-200 f2.8. And a lot of people are really, really going to like that, especially if you're shooting portraiture. Now, a really cool feature that video shooters will like is that this lens maintains its focus as it's being zoomed. So that is going to be super, super helpful. It also has a new hypersonic motor inside that's designed to be 30% slimmer while still providing fast and accurate autofocusing. That's nice. Other features include a durable polycarbonate diaphragm made of fluorine, internal focusing and zoom, a tripod mount collar, a huge 82mm thread size, a minimum focusing distance of 37.4 inches, that's approximately 0.95 meters, and it weighs in at just 52.6 ounces, that's about 1.49 kilograms. It'll be available in Canon, Nikon, and Sigma mounts sometime in April 2016 with a price tag of $1,099 US. You know, I think that Sigma is going to sell a ton of these. I think it's going to be a top seller for them. Once APS-C shooters learn that it's going to give them results that are pretty darn close to a 70-200mm f2.8, I think they're going to jump on this in droves. Now, along with this lens, Sigma also announced its 30mm f1.4 DCDN Contemporary. This one is designed specifically for mirrorless shooters as it's available in both Sony E and Micro Four Thirds mounts. And of this lens, Sigma says it's the, quote, first affordable f1.4 performance lens for the mirrorless market, end quote. It's sleek and compact and has a smooth and speedy stepping motor, which is going to be a huge hit for those that are shooting video. And the company says it's going to be available sometime in March 2016 with a reasonable price tag of just $339 US. If your photography is causing harm, you're just not doing it right. In fact, you might want to give it up altogether because photography just isn't for you. And I think that applies to damage done on Monday, February 22nd, 2016, to an iconic shipwrecked fishing boat in Point Reyes, California. According to the Marin Independent Journal, the fishing boat, which has been beached for a long, long time at Tamales Bay, one that's a local landmark and popular subject for photos, was engulfed in flames at about 1:30 a.m. Monday morning. After more than 2 hours of battling the fire, it was discovered that the entire stern of the boat has been destroyed. Yeah, not good. Well, it didn't take long before outraged locals found that an amateur photographer had posted long exposure sparks photos on Instagram, which featured the boat that evening, a photo which has since been deleted. The photo shows sparks hitting the boat with no fire damage yet, and it was posted the night of that fire. So it doesn't take a genius to draw the conclusion that this photo shoot resulted in the boat catching fire. I think that's a fairly reasonable assumption here. Now, the EXIF data of the photos would prove it, assuming that the camera's date and time were set properly, but apparently, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't look like anyone is going to be paying for this ill-advised photo shoot, as, according to Fire Chief Jim Fox, quote, "We won't investigate something when there's no evidence of a crime or actual damage. This was already a derelict vessel. I don't know how you can damage something that's already broken," end quote. Okay. Legally, that may be true in this case, but the landmark is apparently damaged to the point where they might now have to haul it away because it's become unsafe. People apparently climb all over this thing. So no more photo shoots at this landmark. I mean, imagine how many senior photo shoots have been done on and around this boat, right? Of this senseless destroying of the boat, photographer Fede Benavides said this on Instagram, quote, "It is a real shame that some human burnt down a historical landmark like the hashtag Point Reyes shipwreck for a stupid steel wool long exposure. Apparently common sense is not that common, and it is not that obvious to some people that playing with fire on a wooden boat will burn it down," end quote. You know, what's really messed up here is that possibly the last photos of this ship before it was destroyed were taken by a now anonymous photographer who brought about its demise. The photos are really cool, don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't worth ruining things for everyone else. Next. Like Sigma, third-party lens maker Tamron makes great glass these days. In fact, they have some pretty stellar lenses out there, and their new 85mm f1.8 VC lens could very well be among them. This new lens is designed for full-frame Canon and Nikon DSLRs, and they say that soon it's going to be available for Sony as well. Now, I think that this, of course, is going to appeal to those that are shooting portraits because it's a classic focal length for that work, and that f1.8 aperture, along with Tamron's VC image stabilization, is going to be very welcomed as well. It has a fluorine coating on the front element to prevent condensation and reduce smudges, and features the company's moisture resistance construction to help keep it dry. It also has an electromagnetic diaphragm system for precise diaphragm and aperture control, ultrasonic silent drive technology for fast and quiet autofocusing, full-time manual focus override in AF mode, and a 9-blade circular aperture for smooth bokeh. Or bokeh, if you want to say it the gringo way. I don't know, maybe gringo doesn't apply to Japan at all, but you know what I'm saying. Let's move on. The Tamron 85mm f1.8 VC will be available sometime in April 2016, but pricing is yet to be announced. In addition to this lens, Tamron also announced their SP 90mm f2.8 DI VC USD 1:1 macro, wow, that's a mouthful, huh? With new XY shift compensation, which uses an accelerometer to detect and counteract camera shake, improving stabilization for all focal distances from infinity to macro. That's pretty cool technology, and I think we're going to see that in more of their lenses going forward, no doubt about it. The Tamron 90mm f2.8 macro lens will be available sometime in March 2016 for Canon and Nikon mounts, with Sony coming in the future, and this lens will go for about $649 US. In addition to the two new lenses announced by Tamron, the company introduced its tap-in console accessory to help with updating and adjusting lenses. Similar to Sigma's USB dock, this new product from Tamron will help photographers apply firmware updates and custom settings to the company's lenses. For the first time, Tamron lens shooters will be able to update and adjust their lenses by attaching the console and then plugging it into a Mac or a PC via USB, then running Tamron's tap-in utility program. Previous to this, you would have to take in your lens to an authorized Tamron customer service center to make those adjustments for you. With this product, you'll be able to install firmware updates, custom functions, adjust the focus limiter, customize full-time manual focus override, and adjust vibration compensation to your liking. So far, just four of Tamron's lenses can take advantage of the tap-in console, and you can get one sometime in March 2016, but pricing has yet to be announced. Sigma's dock, however, goes for $59 US, so it should be in that ballpark. If you're in the market for premium compact cameras, Nikon has unveiled a trio featuring 1-inch sensors in what it's calling its DL line, DL standing for digital lens. Nikon is gearing these cameras towards photographers who want and need something a little bit more in a camera that they're bringing with them when they leave their DSLR or serious mirrorless system at home. These things are more along the lines of the awesome Sony RX100 Mark IV, which I own, a new segment out there of premium compact cameras with a whole lot of cool features in them. As with that camera, the lens is fixed, so it's important to choose wisely here. This new series of cameras from Nikon launches with the DL18-50 f1.8-2.8, the DL24-85 f1.8-2.8, and the DL24-500 f2.8-5.6. Each camera features a 20.8 megapixel CX format 1-inch BSI CMOS sensor with a maximum ISO of up to 12,800. And of course, no one's going to shoot that high on these cameras because they're going to be pretty darn noisy, but it's available if you need it. These cameras are powered by an Xpeed 6A image processor that can do 60 frames per second continuous shooting with fixed AF or 20 frames per second with continuous AF. That's pretty cool. You know, these are little speed demons, in other words. Albeit not at all the ideal choice for shooting little Johnny's soccer game. Not at all. Each camera packs a high-speed autofocus system with 105 phase detect areas or 175 focus points in contrast detect AF mode and a dual detect optical VR feature that helps produce sharper images by compensating for camera shake. The main differences between these three bodies are the lenses, of course, and that DL24-500 has a completely different form factor from the other two. Each camera has a manual focus ring to give you more control, fluorine coating for repelling dirt, water, and oils, and a nano crystal coat for reducing ghosting and flaring. On the back of each camera is a high-res flippy OLED touchscreen, and the bulkier model goes a step further with a full vari-angle screen. Each camera shoots 4K video internally at 30 frames per second, 1,200 frames per second slow motion, can send the video out to a monitor or record via the HDMI port. You can grab stills from video. There's the PSAM dial for all your exposure modes, and there's a separate exposure compensation dial as well. They can all shoot RAW as well as JPEG, have a hot shoe, Nikon's new SnapBridge technology for wireless connectivity via Bluetooth to a smart device, and have Wi-Fi as well as NFC, of course. Of the three cameras, only the DL24-85 features a super macro mode to allow for one-to-one life-size macro shots, and that's done simply by setting the manual zoom on the camera to the super macro position. Only the larger DL24-500 has a built-in electronic viewfinder, aka an EVF, but if you want one for the other cameras, that's available as an add-on option. The DL18-50, DL24-85, and DL24-500 will be available sometime in the summer of 2016 for $850, $650, and $1,000 US respectively. You know, I think that these are interesting offerings from Nikon. I don't know how well they're going to sell, but everyone is putting out premium compact bodies because the low end is pretty much gone thanks to smartphones, right? I mean, they're good enough in the eyes of consumers, and that's all they need these days. So if you need something with a little bit more power, you've got these available. If you don't want to go to a DSLR or a mirrorless camera, of course. Next. You've heard me talk here on the show about how important it is, in my opinion, for photographers to have an Instagram account. And that's even if you don't do photography professionally. I think it's a great way of sharing your photos and getting great feedback on them as well. And hey, many people are using it to actually make money. You can build a career for yourself these days on Instagram. Many are doing that. And just recently, they allowed you to have multiple accounts. And that's something that is super helpful if you want to have an account for your photography. Let's say if you have a business or just want to show off your photography. And another one for family and friends, all your personal stuff. Photos of your cats and your meals and that sort of thing. But having long, truly random passwords, of course, is a good idea, but they're hard to remember. Thus, being able to have multiple accounts now removes the need to log in and out all the time. That is a massively huge feature. So many people are excited about that. Doesn't seem like it'd be exciting, but it actually is. Anything that saves you time and frustration these days, because we're a very impatient society, huge, huge feature upgrade. But now Instagram is taking things a step further on the security front by implementing two-factor authentication. Now, if you're not familiar with what this is, basically they text a code to your phone and you enter that in on the website or in the app. And unless someone is in physical possession of your phone, they're not going to be able to hack you as easily. This is one more layer of security, and that is very much welcome. Now, unfortunately, this comes a few months too late for a good friend of mine. Her young daughter is a popular model. She'd racked up over 100,000 followers on Instagram, and then her account got hacked. By the time she got the account back, all her photos had been deleted, and the account was trashed, and she lost many of those followers. She had to start over from scratch. Her account is way more secure now and will be with two-factor authentication, but still, that was a huge, huge pain for her and quite distressing. So if you're using Instagram or any other service out there that offers two-factor authentication, consider using it because it's going to make things quite a bit more secure. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that applies to an incident that happened February 10th, 2016, on the beach at a resort in Santa Teresita, Argentina. Sadly, people who clearly have no sense scooped up a baby dolphin out of the water and passed it around so they can take selfies with it. As a result, the dolphin died. Yeah, not cool. You know, another humanity fail, right? And hey, if you think aliens are visiting Earth, incidents like this are reason enough for them to make a hard left before they enter the atmosphere and flip us the bird, because this is disgusting human behavior. Why would you want to come here and study humans when this is what they're doing? Now, the Argentine Wildlife Foundation published a statement saying that the La Plata dolphin is vulnerable and that only an estimated 30,000 of them exist off the coast of Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil. You know, you get a crowd of people together and otherwise good people lose their minds and do stupid things like kill a dolphin just because they wanted to have a picture with it. Whether it's for a selfie or for photos in general, Risking an animal's life just isn't worth it. Next. I don't know about you, but I love shows that explain how things are made. And one of those shows is How It's Made on the Science Channel. In a recent episode, they visited a Manfrotto tripod factory showing how aluminum tubes are cut to specific lengths by precise machines and later joined with custom housings by hand. If you'd like to see this 3-minute-long segment, hit the show notes for episode 50 at petapixel.com/podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 50 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, where I just hit 12,000 followers amazingly, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 51. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.